is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We're glad to be with all of you for this first day of Taking Aim and participation in the WBAI Fund Drive. We have something extra special for you. Edited, Bear Stearns, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. Four incredible programs. First, an introduction. Part two, the specter of systemic collapse. Part three, regulatory charade, a new crisis in the making. Part four, the depth of the assault on working people. For your contribution of $100 to WBAI, it is our gift to you. Spectacular. So highly documented and political analysis that you won't forget. It is for you to remember, to understand, and to use. $100 contribution. Today on Taking Aim, we're going to play a portion of the first of the CDs, and then we're going to discuss and hopefully and intently you are going to be ringing the phones and contributing to maintain Taking Aim on the air and WBAI in your homes 24/7. Again, 212-209-2950. I have to say, I think I did a really bang-up job, wonderful job editing this, and you're going to really appreciate it. For a little background, on March 14th, the financial markets in the United States and consequently around the world were on the precipice of a collapse on the scale of the Great Depression. As the Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke told Congress, on Thursday, March 13th, Bear Stearns, this is Bear Stearns, the fifth largest investment house in the United States, advised the Federal Reserve and other government agencies that its liquidity position had significantly deteriorated and that it would have to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy the next day unless alternative sources of funds became available, end quote. What Ben Bernanke is saying is that this was an ultimatum. Federal government, step in, bail us out, or there is going to be such a crisis because of the interlocking nature of the financial markets, and particularly with Bear Stearns, the largest holder of mortgage-backed securities in the United States. This is a crisis that had been brewing for over a year with bank after bank and mortgage company after mortgage company taking vast losses, writing down vast losses. And what this did was it made all the lending institutions, the bank lending institutions, gun shy. They didn't want to lend any more money to prop up the failing banks and other stock institutions such as Bear Stearns. Consequently, without money to cover their losses, these companies were folding. And that's why we began this series, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. Person after person has been writing to us from all over the world telling us that this series was so important for them in their understanding of what is taking place with capitalism throughout the world. And we know you're going to want a copy of it. 212-209-2950 for your contribution to WBAI of $100. It's a four-part series. Ralph?
Well, Maya, what I want to emphasize to our listeners is that this four-part series synthesizes what we have been doing really for 8 years on Taking Aim, because we have attempted to show and demonstrate and to mobilize a constituency for an understanding of the fact that capitalism as a social and an economic and a social system is in terminal crisis in a process of decisive decay. And this is not ephemeral. It's not a matter of this president or this administration or whatever. It's in the structural character of the nature of capitalism as a system that the rate of profit declines, that is increasingly dependent upon abandoning productive forces, transferring its investment into essentially fictive capital, speculation, paper shuffling, deeply dependent on deficit financing, what John Maynard Keynes called pump priming at the time of the Great Depression, which never resolved the crisis of capital, has been building and building and building as an inevitable, explosive element of a system that is incapable of sustaining itself. And you don't need Marxists or socialists as we are to articulate this reality, because the established media, the pundits of finance capital itself in their major organs, in the Wall Street Journal, in the Financial Times, in U.S. News and World Report, in Business Week, in the Guardian, in the Independent, in the Christian Science Monitor, the Wall Street Journal, and the New York Times, all of the major mouthpieces of capital itself have been compelled to acknowledge the reality and to express an alarm that is almost without precedent. The language could come right out of Das Kapital. Here is the Sunday Telegraph, brothers and sisters, which articulates that the crisis that the Federal Reserve attempted to meet was what they call a derivatives Chernobyl. Here is James Melcher, president of the New York hedge fund Balestra Capital. When the Fed stepped in, we were facing pandemonium, the risk of a total meltdown. I do not think most people have any idea how bad this chain is. I am still not sure the Fed can maintain the solvency of the U.S. banking system. Brothers and sisters, this series synthesizes this information, articulates it in a coherent, cohesive, and clarifying fashion, and equips us to take our position in the struggles to come, to be equipped to mobilize our constituency, the mass of our people. This is why we consider this a series so important, and why we consider that it is a very important premium for free speech radio. Because let me be very clear with you, brothers and sisters, this crisis, it's like a tsunami. It's only the first little wave. It is a crisis that will deepen and extend beyond what we have today in short order.
212-209-2950. Let's keep WBAI solvent and broadcasting 24/7. And our gift to you, the collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital, for your donation of $100 to WBAI. Michael, let's start with the collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital. This is the first section, the first 30 minutes or so of the four-part series.
Panic is old hat on Wall Street, wrote James Grant in the Washington Post on Sunday, March 16th. Rarely before, however, has there been a crisis so comprehensive as this one. On Friday, March 14th, invoking a little-used provision that had been added to the Federal Reserve Act in 1932 at the height of the Great Depression, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York decided to infuse credit to Bear Stearns. But because Bear Stearns is not a depository bank of the Federal Reserve, the money was going to go through J.P. Morgan Chase. J.P. Morgan Chase, a mammoth $1.6 trillion bank that operates in more than 60 countries. Under the terms of this secured loan facility, the Federal Reserve would be able to extend credit for up to 28 days. The risk of a default by Bear Stearns would be borne by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, not by J.P. Morgan Chase. In other words, J.P. Morgan Chase, the mammoth banking institution, was only going to be a conduit for cash provided by the U.S. Central Bank. How unusual. Why was this taking place? Bear Stearns, founded in 1923, 15,500 employees, $300 billion on its balance sheet, the fifth largest investment bank in the United States, the second largest underwriter of mortgage bonds. Bear Stearns, with its imposing Madison Avenue headquarters, which in itself is worth between $800 million and $1 billion. Bear Stearns, a stalwart of the financial institutions of the United States, couldn't meet its credit obligations. An incredible crisis. hitting the financial institutions of the United States. No longer mortgage crisis with the subprime mortgage lenders like Countrywide failing and taken over by Bank of America. As Alan Greenspan, the former Federal Reserve chief, wrote in the Financial Times March 16th, the current financial crisis in the United States is likely to be judged in retrospect as the most wrenching since the end of the Second World War. Today on Taking Aim, we will discuss in more detail the collapse of Bear Stearns and what it means. What is the crisis of fictive capital? Ralph?
For those of our listeners, brothers and sisters, who have been paying attention to what we have been trying to say over a space of 7 years, we have attempted to show and to discuss the abiding crisis of capitalism as an economic and political and social order. Because long ago, capitalism had ceased to be capable of advancing what are called productive forces in society. Long ago, capitalism had become dependent upon deficit financing, upon waste production such as the addiction to arms, upon constant speculation on pieces of paper against which monies are lent that bear no resemblance to the actual collateral that is sustaining those loans, with speculation upon speculation, what is called fictive capital, a house of cards waiting for its collapse. Here now we have the abiding analysis of socialists and of Marxists sustained by the actual mouthpieces of capital in all their main organs, the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Guardian of London, the London Times, the U.S. News and World Report, Fortune Magazine, Business Week, all sustaining a critique that is essentially one of Marxism without the name.
And Ralph, when we have the collapse of Bear Stearns and the intervention of the federal government that was announced on Friday, that wasn't sufficient. The Federal Reserve, despite dramatic actions on multiple fronts to avert a crisis of what it considered was going to be a crisis of the global financial system, decided that it wasn't sufficient to just fund Bear Stearns to supply the credit to let it meet its obligations. And over the weekend, there were marathon negotiations in New York and Washington, and a decision was made that J.P. Morgan Chase, the major Wall Street bank, would buy Bear Stearns for a bargain basement price, paying $2 a share for an institution that plays a central role in executing financial transactions. Now, this was 3.5% of what the Bear Stearns stock had been on Thursday before this decision was made, but it was only 2.5% of the value of what Bear Stearns was on Valentine's Day in February.
98% of the value of one of the most important financial and speculative and stockbrokering institutions of capitalist society, 98% of its value disappearing overnight, handed over to J.P. Morgan Chase, the 14,000 employees of Bear Stearns who were investors in Bear Stearns, losing everything that they have, is classic with capitalism. A Bear Stearns market, says James Grant. Panic is old hat on Wall Street, he begins his analysis. However, rarely has there been a crisis so comprehensive as this one. Has he merely engaged in rhetoric? He continues, it first materialized last summer in the shape of a disturbance in the low-rated or subprime mortgage market. Contained, the regulatory establishment hopefully pronounced. But, in fact, it has blazed across markets and time zones with central bankers, politicians, and treasury functionaries in hot and futile pursuit, he writes. What makes this proceeding so frightening is that not only is credit in crisis, but so, too, is money. The well-founded doubts about the promises to pay money and the nature and integrity of the dollar at stake are in question. And so on Friday, The Federal Reserve committed to lend undisclosed billions to bail out Bear Stearns, a top Wall Street purveyor of mortgage-backed securities and the leading lender to hedge funds. But where will, James Grant writes in the Washington Post, where will the Fed find these dollars? Where it always does. It has to print them. Despite, he writes, the abundant evidence from the currency and gold markets that the world has about all the dollar bills it cares to hold. In short, the dollar is virtually worthless. The dollar is without standing. The dollar is compromised by deficit. The dollar bears no relation to real value. It is an artificial construct today, brothers and sisters, and the global economy is predicated upon a phantom.
Ralph, J.P. Morgan Chase, this major institution, $1.5 trillion of assets, operating in more than 60 countries. J.P. Morgan Chase didn't become this behemoth by making stupid investment decisions. It was going to get this venerable, also venerable institution, Bear Stearns. But J.P. Morgan Chase said, hey, federal government, Federal Reserve, we don't want to take on the risk of the speculative investments. So the Federal Reserve said, J.P. Morgan Chase, do us a favor. You'll take over all the great assets of Bear Stearns, and we will take on the risk of the $30 billion worth of the speculative mortgage-backed investments.
In short, it's what David Stockman called so succinctly the corporate soup line. The same corporate soup line that sees the federal government subsidizing all the major sectors of capitalist industry in the United States. Not only are they not paying taxes, but they receive outright government subsidies, which are virtual looting of the treasury. And then the analysis with respect to Bear Stearns by the financial analyst of the Washington Post, James Grant. By the look of things, he writes, America's surfeited creditors must make room for many billions more. It says, the markets are in uncharted waters. Robert Rubin, chairman of the Citigroup Executive Committee, urged the government to exert itself on behalf of the mortgage market. And Grant writes, who are these bankers who went sailing off the end of the earth and thereby find it necessary to pass the cup to the government? The company of errant, lavishly compensated navigators includes none other than Robert Rubin himself. Now, Robert Rubin is not only chairman of the Citigroup Executive Committee, he was Bill Clinton's, what was he, Secretary of Treasury or Secretary of Commerce, Maya?
Treasury.
Last fall, the former Treasury Secretary confessed to Fortune magazine, Grant writes, that until the mortgage storms broke over his head in the summer of 2007, he was, quote, unfamiliar with the complex mortgage structures with which Citigroup's own balance sheet was packed. Almost certainly, the gulf between competence and compensation on Wall Street has never been wider, writes James Grant. These are fraudulent individuals with the color of authority presiding over a house of cards, enriching themselves and their cronies in the process, and abundantly incompetent and indifferent to the consequences. These lapses in mortgage underwriting are justly called, Grant stated, the greatest failure of ratings and risk management ever, unquote. Mortgages are far from the only blighted department of credit. The same carefree lending standards that led to record high home foreclosures has brought deepening troubles in the market for loans to highly indebted companies. The no document, interest only, no money down mortgage is a kind of universal American business model. In other words, hand them the cash, milk the public, stick the homeowner, and hand out the cash to the speculators, the executives, the captains of capital. What does Grant state? It wouldn't be so bad if the United States were not the issuer of the world's reserve currency. The dollar is not only America's script, it is the store of value and the medium of exchange in Asia, South America, and the Middle East. And yet here's the rub. The Federal Reserve makes monetary policy for one country only. This is a critique which is devastating in its implications. He ends this article, and it's a long article. It is a pickle for the ages. Not one without its compensations. The falling prices in Wall Street are beginning to restore semblance of value to stocks and bonds, but the plunging dollar prompts a serious reexamination of worldwide monetary arrangements, which is a polite way of saying the system is in terminal decay.
Ralph, it's interesting how quickly this is escalating. The subprime crisis began 1 year ago, and it is 2 weeks ago, February 27th, that Ben Bernanke, the head of the Fed, appeared before the Financial Services Committee of the House of Representatives, and this is before the Senate Banking Committee. And this was to deliver the Federal Reserve semi-annual report to Congress. He believed at the time, he said, that the U.S. could avert a recession. Now, he said this, Bernanke said this, but the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Financial Times, everyone says the U.S. is headed into a deep recession. So I don't know where Bernanke gets his analysis. But even though he said there wouldn't be a recession and there wouldn't be a crisis, he painted a grim picture of the economy that's reeling from a housing collapse, a credit and banking collapse, a slowdown in consumer spending, growing unemployment, 63,000 announced as being employed in the last report. This is just in a monthly report. There are hundreds of thousands who are filing unemployment. There's virtually zero economic growth by capitalist standards of measuring growth. And there's accelerating inflation, a weakening dollar, and as everyone can see, the basket of goods, the consumer basket of goods, what we purchase, the prices are going up. And that's what they mean by inflation. It costs more to live. Just look at the price of oil, from $20 a barrel to over $100 a barrel. So he said this on February 27th. What was the reaction of President Bush and the Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson? On February 28th, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, who was then seconded by President Bush at his Thursday press conference, February 28th, they rejected all proposals that were being worked out between the Wall Street banks and the Congress, the Democratic Party-led Congress, for a government-funded bailout of mortgage lenders, banks, and financial institutions that were holding tens of billions of dollars in bad investments linked to these subprime and other shaky mortgages. So 2 weeks ago, the government was saying, we will not step in. 2 weeks later, not only is there a massive bailout of Bear Stearns, it is announced that there's a massive bailout of all these banking institutions. Ralph?
Maya, once again, let's return to the financial pundits of the capitalist press. Here's the International Herald Tribune on March 11th, and Reuters correspondent James Saft is the analyst. In the United States, the economy and banking are pushing each other downhill, is the headline. Should we be more worried about the new crisis coming to a head in the financial system? Or that the United States is self-evidently in recession? Sadly, we don't have to choose. Banks starved of capital are calling in their debts, turning clients, notably hedge funds, into forced sellers, as large swathes of the financial markets are caught in a vicious cycle of margin calls, fire sales, and further price collapses. The United States Federal Reserve has tried to break the cycle again by offering an additional $200 billion to the banks on easier terms and for longer, but confidence in its ability to succeed has fallen. Meanwhile, in the real world, he writes, consumers and company managers have gotten the message and are firing each other as providers of goods and services and wage-earning employees. The payroll data of the United States is grim indeed. Their retail and consumption figures are hardly encouraging. The Fed's effort to isolate the effects of the financial crunch from the real economy have clearly failed, said Lena Komaleva, an economist at the brokerage firm Tulet Prebon in London. We are now seeing the materialization of this new relationship between the financial and the real economy, where both are now in profound crisis, unquote. In essence, Saft writes, the negative feedback loop that the Fed fears with banking and the economy pushing one another downhill has taken hold. Payrolls fell by 63,000 in February, falling for the second consecutive month, the most in over 5 years. Banks have become even more unwilling to take risks with capital. They are asking borrowers to post more collateral against loans, even when these loans are used to finance investment in supposedly safe instruments like treasury securities or mortgage bonds backed by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. And what he writes in his extraordinary acknowledgement of the crisis, he says, prices for corporate debt and mortgages are at levels that imply a depression, not just a recession. There is no good reason to expect these prices to improve in the near term, whether or not you are of the view that 1929 is at hand. And he writes, the banks will get some of the $1 trillion, but not most, meaning that mortgage debt and housing have a lot further to fall. The impact of all this on the economy and the impact of this economic downturn will result on the banks, which is, in a word, scary, unquote.
I want to go in more detail into something you were mentioning about the Federal Reserve loaning up to $200 billion to the investment banks. These are the Wall Street investment banks, not necessarily depository banks such as Bank of America or Citigroup,
yes,
or J.P. Morgan,
yes,
Chase, which are the traditional banks.
Mm-hmm.
And this $200 billion is among its $700 billion stash of treasury bonds. And what it's going to do with this $200 billion is, in effect, it's going to vouch for the credit worthiness of mortgage-backed assets. That is the compilation of mortgages that these mortgage companies and investment banks pull together. And then they use that as an instrument for trading. They're going to vouch for this the credit worthiness of these mortgage-backed assets that don't really have much market value. In other words, nobody wants them because many of the mortgages that are pooled together, they've been foreclosed, these houses, and the mortgages don't have value. There's a collapse in the U.S. home sales and prices. There's almost a million homes that are vacant, or new homes plus homes that to be resold, you know, that have been occupied before. And these mortgage securities would have been written off as losses by the finance houses. So instead of their having to write off losses, which they've been doing for the past year, over almost $100 billion of losses among the many banks, both U.S. and international, instead of writing them off as losses, the Fed is coming in and propping them up and saying, you don't have to write them up as losses. We'll back them with $200 billion. This is the first time this is actually taking place. It's the most massive debt relief plan for Wall Street that has ever been instituted. And as you say, it really reveals a very deep crisis of capitalism.
Well, Maya, the analysts of the capitalist press are extremely clear about this. The headline in the New York Times on March 14th, Economy Hammered by Toxic Blend of Ailments, by Vikas Bajaj. Everything is going wrong for the American economy at once. People are buying less. Most things are costing more. Mortgage rates are rising. The dollar is falling. Prices of key commodities like oil are leaping from one record high to the next. On Thursday, the dollar plumbed to new lows against the Japanese yen and other major currencies. The price of an ounce of gold jumped above $1,000 for the first time, and lenders have raised home loan rates once again. Government figures show retail sales fell in February. Consumers are cutting back on cars, furniture, electronics. Stocks have fallen sharply after the retail sales report. A large investment fund says it is nearing collapse. The volatility that has defined the market continues unabated. A toxic blend of economic and financial developments is testing policymakers and lawmakers who are struggling to contain a slump brought on by the collapse of the mortgage market, a downturn that is sure to push the economy into deep recession. Current conditions are a far cry from 1970s. Resurgent inflation is raising the threat of stagflation, a condition in which unemployment and the price of goods and services both rise. And he continues, the credit markets began to seize up in August, and the steps taken by the Federal Reserve and the rest of the federal government bolster stocks briefly, but have done little to stem the larger downward drift. And he continues, the stocks and bonds will decline. The dollar will keep falling until the weaker exchange rate increases American exports. And then he says the following. The fall of the dollar has contributed to the surge in commodity prices, oil, foodstuffs, and many other raw materials priced in dollars. And as the currency falls in value, suppliers of these commodities demand higher prices just to keep pace, just to stay even. The weakness of the dollar explains why oil prices jumped $23 a barrel in 6 weeks alone. Oil futures touched $111 a barrel for the first time and settled at $110 on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold prices surged past $1,000 a troy ounce. Where do we go? Said John Kilduff, Senior Vice President for Energy and MF Global in New York. Where can investors go? They are fleeing the dollar. They are seeking out hard assets like commodities, and it's pushing up oil prices. This
is Taking Aim with
Ram Shon
and Maya Shon, and we'll have a little station ID. This is WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial and on the Internet, www.wbai.org. You've been listening to the first part of The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. This is a four-part series, with part two being the specter of systemic collapse, part three, regulatory charade, a new crisis in the making, and part four, the depth of the assault on working people. That is what each and every one of us is feeling every day now. Ralph?
Well, Maya, we've been documenting, brothers and sisters, in this series, the character, the magnitude, and the depth of the crisis. In a moment, we're going to talk about an essential part of this series, namely the devastating impact on working people and the mass of humanity of this enduring crisis. But, brothers and sisters, what I want to emphasize and what this series is so critical in illuminating is what, in fact, is going on a continuing basis with capitalism. Indeed, we just have to cite again what the bourgeois press itself has been acknowledging. That Sunday Telegraph article about the crisis, derivatives Chernobyl, of which Bear Stearns is the literal expression, quotes James Melcher, president of the New York hedge fund Balestra Capital. We were on the verge of pandemonium. There is the risk of a total meltdown. I don't think most people have any idea how bad this chain is. I am not sure the Fed can maintain the solvency of the U.S. banking system. That's Melcher. Now, Melcher is the very person who had speculated on the collapse of U.S. mortgage securities and had made a fabulous return on the basis of his inside knowledge. We're talking here, brothers and sisters, about Bear Stearns with total positions of $13.4 trillion. You know what its cash reserve was for that? $17 billion. That's less than 1/100 of 1%. 1/100 of 1%, they're speculating upon a collateral base that is virtually infinitesimal. It is a house of cards, and that is why all the captains of capital are acknowledging that this system has not rescued itself, but on the contrary, has barely postponed an ever-deepening crisis. We ask you, equip yourselves with the data, with the information, with the analysis, with the understanding, because the crises that face us are huge and mounting, and humanity is in the offing with its starvation, with its hunger mode. Please, get this series. We are in the process of preparing for a huge mobilization of the masses of our population in this country and beyond. As Leon Trotsky said at the time that he wrote the history of the Russian Revolution, the masses are in a posture of taking stock, fully registering. magnitude of the crisis facing them. They are taking stock. We are only beginning to sense the fight back that will emerge. 212-209-2950. We have to arm ourselves politically, ideologically, and intellectually, and so that we can prepare for the struggles that we are facing, brothers and sisters. One last point I want to make in this regard. In the New York Times, there is an article by Edward Luttwak called President Apostate, in which it speaks about Barack Obama as the apostate in the eyes of the Muslims of the world. And he states that there's going to be an inevitable assassination of Barack Obama. Now, who is Edward Luttwak? He is none other than the Defense Intelligence Agency figure who goes under the name of Miles Ignatius. And I mention this not because Barack Obama is involved in any process of change of the capitalist system, but because we can see how the capitalist system will address its crisis by staging another event, by imputing the murder of a head of state to fanatical terrorist others, to prepare for the repression at home and the adventures aboard. The Israelis have sponsored a T-shirt in New York that is gaining. It is being distributed all over the city. Who killed Barack Obama is the T-shirt. This is not an ancillary matter. It is linked to the crisis of capital. It is linked to the deepening pauperization of the mass of our people, brothers and sisters. We need to be clear. We need to be focused. We need to be equipped. And we need to be ready. Arm yourselves intellectually and politically. Get this series. Prepare for the struggles ahead. 212-209-2950.
Again, 212-209-2950. I want to thank all of you who called while we were playing the excerpt. Remember, this is one small excerpt. This series peels the onion. Each part of it goes into more and more detail. And it's your support of WBAI that keeps programming such as The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital coming to you 24/7, and particularly taking aim on the air every Tuesday. So please get on the phone now, 212-209-2950, and demonstrate your support for WBAI and taking aim. Your $100 contribution. Remember, you can pay with your credit cards or with bank debit cards or checks, money orders, any way possible, all at once or over time. 212-209-2950. It's important to note that what we're talking about with the intervention of the Federal Reserve is unprecedented because these banking institutions, such as Bear Stearns, are not regulated by the SEC or by the FDIC. These are the two regulatory agencies, the SEC for Wall Street and the FDIC for the depository banks. Because what Bear Stearns is doing, not its investments on Wall Street are regulated, but what it did by setting up these hedge funds, these special private partnerships with extreme speculative investments, is these, the federal government had ruled, are out the purvey of the SEC. And what happened in 1999 is, under the Clinton administration, is that the banks felt that their regulation wasn't allowing them to create these financial instruments that, such as the investment banks were doing. And under the Clinton administration in 1999, a Depression-era law called the Glass-Steagall Act was overturned. And it allowed the banks as well to create hedge funds, these speculative instruments. And there are many types of speculative instruments. We don't have time to go into them today, and we will in the future weeks. And that's why we ask you to support Taking Aim. 212-209-2950. Have for yourself The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital, a four-part series, $100 contribution to WBAI.
Brothers and sisters, what Maya is describing unfolds as follows. Bear Stearns had positions of $13.4 trillion. What are those things that they do with that money? They engage in swaps, swaptions, caps, collars, and floors, as it's described, a heady edifice of newfangled instruments based on a meager asset base. So what do we have here? You have the collapse of this speculative boondoggle, as the Telegraph called it, the collapse of $13.4 trillion contracts, lock, stock, and barrel. Well, what about the rescue of J.P. Morgan Chase? Quote, J.P. Morgan is up to its neck in this soup with $77 trillion of similar contracts. It now has a $90 trillion on its books, a sixth of the global market. That's a solution? Brothers and sisters, 5 years ago, the Bloomberg Financial Services was recording the fact that, quote, a block east of Times Square, the national debt clock is ticking. $19,000 a second, $1.1 million per minute, $66 million per hour. Perched above Avenue of the Americas, the green electronic billboard is tallying the second-by-second growth of U.S. government debt, already at that time at $33 trillion. Now, that is a magnitude of increase in indebtedness and deficit financing, which has been dwarfed by 2008. This crisis is a reflection of the bankruptcy of the government, the collapse of the House of Cards economy. And what are the consequences that we've been describing in this series? Quote, U.S. economy leaves record numbers in severe poverty, 32-year high, millions upon millions of working people falling closer to the poverty line, the gulf between the haves and have-nots disappearing, that is to say, widening to the point where you can't distinguish between the two. That is the analysis of Tony Pugh and the McClatchy newspapers. It is a crisis of enormous proportions. We are getting into it in this series in particular, and then we address, as we do at the latter part of the series, the New Statesman analysis of how the rich starve the world. World cereal stocks at all-time low, food aid programs run out of money, millions pressed into starvation. Brothers and sisters, we need to be able to synthesize this information, the relationship between the fictive capital investment of the capitalist speculators and the crisis that is engulfing humankind, a man-made famine, says Raj Patel in The Guardian, food crisis and the revolution of the hungry is the analysis of the Financial Times. Equip yourself with this information, with this analysis, and the relationship between the two. 212-209-2950.
Your contribution of $100, the four-part series, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. We have to understand that on top, that at root, on the foundation of all these speculative investments, for the ones that were the mortgage-backed securities, it is the ganging up of home mortgages. In other words, you go to a mortgage company or you go to a bank and you get a mortgage on a house with the house purchase. And then they take all these mortgages, thousands and thousands of mortgages, and they pool them together, and then they sell that off as a bond. And then people start trading these bonds. And what happened, though, is that as the many of these mortgages were no money down and had a fixed interest rate for a couple of years, at which time the fixed interest rate would end, and whatever the interest rate was would then become the interest rate. So people were buying houses that they couldn't basically afford once it went off that fixed rate. And also in the process, the economy was declining and people were losing their jobs. So while many people were working part-time and had many part-time jobs, and everyone in the family is pitching in, working endless hours, and even if you lose one of those part-time jobs, you no longer have the income to sustain all your debts, not just your debt on your mortgage, but also the accumulated credit card debt as people bought more and more possessions that they thought they must own. And also, as the price of gasoline rises, and particularly outside of the major metropolitan cities where you could possibly take public transit, people are traveling hours to get to work. In the San Francisco Bay Area, people were buying homes in Stockton in the Central Valley and commuting 2 hours each way to work. That uses a lot of gasoline, and so the cost of just getting to work was eating into a great part of their budget. In addition, the price of food was going up rapidly, and I saw even in the stores, for instance, for meat, which we don't eat. But I saw that there's been a 25% increase in the price of meat. So this affects people and what they have to pay for their mortgages. All this we discuss in The Collapse of Bear Stearns and The Crisis of Fictive Capital, and how these ramifications lead to the collapse of this funny money speculative financial markets. The Collapse of Bear Stearns and The Crisis of Fictive Capital, 212-209-2950 for your contribution of $100. Please, let's sustain Taking Aim and WBAI. Ralph?
Well, Maya, in the Guardian newspaper, Raj Patel writes about a man-made famine, and he states, for anyone who understands the current crisis, it is hard to listen to the head of the World Bank, Robert Zoellick, without gagging. Zoellick waxed apocalyptic about the consequences of the global surge in prices, claiming that free trade was a humanitarian necessity. What are the realities? There is no buffer between these price shocks and the bellies of the poorest people on the earth, writes Raj Patel. There is no option to support sustainable small-scale farmers. They are all driven off their land. No option to dip into grain reserves. They've all been sold off to service debt. No way to increase the income of the poorest because the social programs have been eliminated and cut to the bone. These price increases are creating starvation on a scale never before seen. And his analysis has continued. In the discussion about the meeting of the seven major capitalist powers, the G7, where it is acknowledged that in the shadow of the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression and the turmoil in Wall Street and the deepening credit crunch, there is mass starvation in the offing, and the consequences are food prices in Haiti rising by 40% overnight, the price of rice doubling. In Bangladesh, 20,000 textile workers taking to the streets, the price of rice doubling overnight. In Egypt, protests by workers over food prices rocking the textile center of Mahalla, north of Cairo. In Burkina Faso, in the West African nation, a general strike over starvation ensuing in the countryside. A march on parliament in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, to protest the enormous price in food staples and notably a kilogram of rice doubling in cost. In the Ivory Coast, thousands marching on the home of President Laurent Gbagbo shouting, "We are hungry. Life is too expensive. You are killing us." Similar demonstrations and strikes in Bolivia, Peru, Mexico, Indonesia, the Philippines, Pakistan, Uzbekistan, Thailand, Yemen, Ethiopia, and throughout sub-Saharan Africa. Hundreds of millions of people across the planet confronted with the inability to obtain the basic necessities of life. It's but the little beginning of this crisis, brothers and sisters. And meanwhile, Archer Daniels Midlands are reported to have a 42% leap in overnight profits, Agricultural Corporation boosting the greatest profits in their history in the midst of this starvation crisis. Please call 212-209-2950. The crisis of capital has its concomitant, the immiseration and the starvation of the masses of humanity, the destruction of our social gains, the preparation for a revolutionary struggle in the future. 212-209-2950.
212-209-2950. The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. Get on the line. We have volunteers in the pledge room waiting to take your call. The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital, an incredibly edited, as I must say myself, CD set. 212-209-2950. We spend a lot of time preparing these shows, and I spent even more time editing them for you. So please, $100, your contribution to WBAI. Support Taking Aim. Support WBAI. 212-209-2950. I know our program is about the assault, the depth of the assault on working people, and the collapse of the House of Cards financial system. It is important, however, for each and every one of us to understand this, to understand the intricacies, to and what we do in this series is we simplify it so that what the bourgeois press makes seem like it is above our heads, that we can't really understand what is happening, and even some of the directors of these financial houses have no idea what the derivatives systems are that the people, their employees are creating. And so they step back and say, well, I didn't know what was going on. Well, they do know what's going on. They allow this all to happen. 212-209-2950. We're in the last few minutes of this Taking Aim show. We're on 1 hour today. 1 hour only. This is your only opportunity today. Please get on the line. 212-209-2950. Your $100 contribution for your own learning, for your learning, for the increase the knowledge of your friends, your family, your colleagues. Incorporate this into your library. The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. It's been much praised, and we know you're going to want to have a copy. 212-209-2950. $100 contribution for Taking Aim and WBAI.
Well, Ralph, yes? And Maya, I just want to let you know that, as you can hear, I'm sure you can hear, and the listeners can hear, the phones are ringing, and I know you do like that. We all like that when the phones are ringing off the hook and our volunteers are very, very busy. Well, they are ringing right now. In fact, we have about 8-9 calls on the line now. And again, as Maya and Ralph have been saying, 212-209-2950. You can also pledge using your plastic, if you have that, Visa card, MasterCard, or American Express. You could send a check or a money order to WBAI as well. That number again is 212-209-2950. Thank you very much. Maya and Ralph, I have a couple of pledge cards. Would you like me to read them now?
Oh, yes, please. We always like thanking people on it.
Oh, okay. Let's see. We have Dagny Rodriguez from Staten Island, New York, called in for Taking Aim. A very generous donation. Jose Garcia from Long Beach, New York. Thank you very much. Olivia Fernandez from the Bronx. Well done. Bill Salo from Rockaway, New Jersey. Thank you very, very much. 212-209-2950. Craig Smith from Brooklyn, New York. And Gerald Chavez from New York, New York, calling in with their pledges of support for WBAI for Taking Aim here at 99.5 FM. If we could fill the board up as we approach the news hour at 6 p.m., I think we will have done a very good job for Taking Aim this afternoon. I'm going to throw it back to you guys out there in California. Thanks very much for spending the time with us, helping us to raise funds for radio station WBAI. Ralph and Maya?
It's our pleasure. WBAI is the bulwark of Taking Aim. It is because of WBAI that Taking Aim reaches people in 77 countries. The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital will make its way around the world because of the support each and every one of us gives to WBAI. How important it is that there is such a radical station as WBAI, listener supported, without censorship, that allows us to present this political analysis, the documentation. There is no other avenue in the broadcast world. That is why Ralph and I are so loyal and so devoted to WBAI. 212-209-2950. Please get on the line. And if the lines are busy, just wait a moment and you'll be able to get through. $100 contribution, the Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. Ralph?
Because it is a crisis that affects us all, brothers and sisters, as the McClatchy newspaper and Tony Pugh outlined it. The U.S. economy is leaving record numbers in severe poverty. As the New York Times, Eric Eckholm, New York Times, March 31st, the jobs are vanishing, the prices are rising, and the food stamp use is near a near record. Life expectancy is half for women in the southern United States. The U.S. Federal Reserve is cutting its interest rates, and the housing slump deepens. High school dropout rate in the major U.S. cities is at 50%, brothers and sisters, and a global food crisis grips Latin America. The Brazilian government has announced the suspension of rice exports. Record high pricing has driven the price of rice out of the reach of its population. Argentina has suspended the sale of wheat. The crisis is affecting Venezuela. It's driven up an annual inflation rate of 28%. Food prices out of all reach in Colombia. This is an enduring, deepening global crisis, brothers and sisters. We detail it. We outline it. We show the relationship between these catastrophic events and the character of capital. Please afford this series for yourselves, equip yourselves for the struggles ahead, support WBAI and Free Speech Radio, 212-209-2950.
We'll be with you next week. This has been Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen for Taking Aim, and thank you, Michael, for being with us and engineering the show. Please continue to call 212-209-2950. Your $100 contribution, the collapse of Bear Stearns, and the crisis of fictive capital. You know what I'm going to give it up.
Thank you very much, Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. The program Taking Aim, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. WBAI is a